Three diplomats who raised concerns about the president's moves toward Ukraine have testified in private. What can they add as they testify this week in public?
The impeachment inquiry opens its doors and lets in the cameras. I'm Steve Inskeep with Noel King, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Demonstrators in Bolivia are chanting not "Yes, we can," but "Yes, we could." How did they force President Evo Morales to surrender his job?
In Hong Kong, the authorities show no sign of giving way to protesters.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
A policeman grappled with one protester before shooting another. What did the demonstrations on two continents say about the push for democracy? Stay with us. We will guide you through this day's news.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A. Member FDIC. Support also comes from Audible with Call Me God, the untold story of the D.C. sniper investigation. The Audible original retraces every step of the manhunt and investigation. Listen with a free 30-day trial at audible.com/untoldstory.
How will the presence of TV cameras change the impeachment inquiry?
We should find out this week. For the first time, House investigators are planning to gather evidence in public. They expect to hear from three U.S. diplomats about the president's efforts around Ukraine. President Trump was looking for investigations of conspiracy theories and of his political rival, Joe Biden. He also held up military aid and a meeting with Ukraine's president. Now, lawmakers will have to decide how, if at all, those acts fit together and what they think the president was trying to do.
NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez is with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Who were the diplomats who were testifying?
Well, on Wednesday, lawmakers are expected to hear from William Taylor. He's the top diplomat in Ukraine. George Kent from the State Department. And on Friday, former ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, is expected to testify. All three, you might remember, met privately with investigators and testified of the administration putting pressure on Ukraine to launch an investigation into a political rival. Taylor, for example, testified of a clear understanding that security aid would not come until Ukraine president committed to doing an investigation. And Kent described a campaign of lies led by Rudy Giuliani to undermine Yovanovitch.
Oh, yeah, the president's personal lawyer who was deeply involved in all of this. Now, how are lawmakers viewing the public phase of this investigation?
Well, it depends on which side of the aisle you are on. Democrats are acknowledging now that the public isn't grasping their message. For one, they say people don't necessarily understand the Latin of quid pro quo. Congressman Jim Himes, who sits on the Intelligence Committee, says people can soon expect to hear a refined message. He was on NBC's Meet the Press.
When you're trying to persuade the American people of something that is really pretty simple, which is that the president acted criminally and extorted in the way a mob boss would extort somebody, a vulnerable foreign country, it's probably best not to use Latin words to explain it.
I guess it is true. Mob bosses generally are not known for using Latin words necessarily. Maybe that's what he's trying to say here. But we'll see how they change their messaging. What about Republicans?
It's interesting because Trump is not only taking his frustrations out on Democrats, but he is also taking them out on Republicans. He tweeted Sunday at Republicans about not getting caught in a fool's trap of raising concern about the July 25th call, but just arguing it's not impeachable. He insists nothing was done wrong, and he wants Republicans to carry that message. The reality is Republicans have struggled to come to a consensus on how to defend the president, and they've gotten limited guidance from this White House other than that Trump wants them to be stronger.
There's something a little confusing I hope you can explain. How significant is it that the president's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, who the president, I presume, doesn't want to testify, has asked a court to decide if he should testify? He's joined this lawsuit already in motion.
Yeah, it's very significant. Mulvaney is trying to join a lawsuit by former White House officials who appear willing to testify if the court orders them to. The lawsuit was filed by former Deputy National Security Advisor Charles Kupperman. And just to note, former National Security Advisor John Bolton has that same attorney and had said he will follow the same guidelines. According to their lawyers, Kupperman nor Bolton will testify until a judge tells them whether to adhere to a congressional subpoena or a White House directive. It is also interesting, though, that Mulvaney has hired his own personal attorney. He's still the acting chief of staff, so that indicates some level of independence from the White House.
Meaning that he may see his interests slightly different or significantly different than the president himself.
We shall see.
Franco, thanks so much.
Thank you.
NPR's Franco Ordonez. Until yesterday, Evo Morales was the longest-serving leader in South America.
But now Bolivia's president is leaving his job. Here's how we got here. Just a few weeks ago, Morales claimed to have won re-election. To do that, he overrode Bolivia's term limits. He said that the limit on how long he could serve violated human rights, and he won that argument in court. But then there were allegations of fraud during his re-election, and so people went out into the streets.
NPR South America correspondent Philip Reeves is following this. Philip, good morning.
Good morning.
What persuaded Morales to go now?
Well, you know, the opposition said from the get-go that last month's elections were a complete fraud, and that's what kicked off those protests that have caused such havoc across the country. The Organization of American States sent in a team to find out what had happened, and early yesterday it revealed its findings, and these were that there were many irregularities in that poll, from computer security flaws to the count, the custody of the ballot, and that really lit the fuse, and the collapse began with amazing speed. I mean, Morales had been under growing pressure. Police on Saturday began deserting their posts. But after that report came out, some of Morales' allies abandoned him. He tried to cling on by going on TV and offering new elections. That didn't work. And the nail in the coffin came when the army chief, shortly after that, announced that he should go. Morales then said, okay, I'm turning in a letter of resignation to the legislature. But he's characterizing this as a coup, as saying that he's stepping aside to restore calm.
Amid all of those items you just listed, I'm thinking of the two that point to the national security state making a decision, police deserting their posts, and you said the army chief turned against the president.
Yeah, and there is some concern about this issue that the military might have overstepped its role, raising the historic specter of a Latin American military takeover. The army certainly accelerated Morales' downfall by announcing at the weekend that it wasn't going to get involved in stopping the protests because it didn't want to confront its own people. And then it really delivered a very strong shove in the back when the army chief said Morales must go. Morales' supporters on the left all around Latin America will likely see this as evidence that this was a kind of coup. The counter-argument will be that he was actually the victim of his determination to bend the rules to remain in power for a fourth term. But all eyes are going to be on what the army does next.
Is it evident who is to be the next president of Bolivia?
Well, we're entering perilous and uncharted waters here, Steve. His vice president's also resigned. The rules say with the president and the VP gone, the head of the Senate should step in, but she's resigned too, and so is the head of the lower house. That will be the next one. There's speculations now that legislators will meet to appoint someone or some kind of transitional body that'll take over until elections. They'll need to act quickly because the situation on the ground is unstable. I'm seeing overnight reports of clashes, and attacks and looting. Morales says he's got a property that's been attacked. So this is a turbulent and dangerous situation.
Is nobody president of Bolivia right now?
Well, it's extremely difficult to know who's in charge because the process of figuring that out hasn't happened. We don't actually know where Morales is and what his next move will be. He's been offered asylum by Mexico, and we don't know what the army's going to do next. So it's a very uncertain situation, Steve.
That's NPR's Philip Reeves. We'll keep listening for your reporting. Philip, thanks.
Welcome.
All right, let's move from the mountains of South America to the shores of East Asia.
It's a different landscape, but it is a very similar story. In Hong Kong, just like in Bolivia, people are protesting against their government. And today, these demonstrators have new grievances. They're focused on the death of a student protester and the arrests of six democratic lawmakers. Now, this protest against the suppression of protests has led to another crackdown. Police fired live rounds at protesters, and they hit a 21-year-old man at close range. Authorities at the hospital say he's in critical condition.
NPR's Julie McCarthy has been covering this story from Hong Kong. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Steve.
What have you seen today?
Well, what you saw today was rage, and it exploded on the streets. The residents of Sai Wan Ho in the northeast corner of Hong Kong Island were furious. That's where the shooting took place, and they stood on the streets berating the police. Crowds on both sides of this big boulevard with the police in the middle yelled all manner of insults at them. You can hear the fury. They're shouting, dismiss the police now. May your family die. Mm. And murderers. And one woman breached the police cordon, wagged her finger at them, and delivered a tirade. I was standing a few yards from her, and one of the policemen squirted pepper spray directly into her face. The police then issued their own warning for everyone to leave or face the same pepper spray. And listen to their anger here. You know, a video circulated online, Stephen, it shows a traffic cop pulling out a revolver, firing three shots, and shooting a protester at close range. Now, tonight, hospital authorities say he underwent an emergency surgery, and local media say there are kidney and liver injuries. Now, in a press conference, police said masked men moved on a policeman, the traffic cop, one with a metal rod, and they denied any reckless use of firearms.
Julie, I'm thinking about what Noel said. You have protests, the police crackdown. The crackdown leads mm-hmm. to more protests, which leads mm-hmm. to more crackdowns. How does each of these increasingly violent steps change the dynamic between protesters and police?
Yeah, it's just this accumulation of anger. You know, there was suspicion of the police before, but now people are prepared to believe the worst with very little evidence. I heard a different Hong Kong this past weekend. You know, people attended vigils for a university student, as Noel pointed out, who died Friday from brain injuries in a fall that many protesters suspect the police had a direct or indirect involvement in. And the police vehemently deny that. One woman who identified only as Poppy said tensions are getting worse and said people are just more willing to escalate the protests right now. She says, listen to the chanting and listen to how it's evolved, Steve. Protesters used to chant, add oil, meaning be robust. Then it evolved to Hong Kong resist. And now the chant is Hong Kong revenge. There is a definite hardening of attitudes.
Julie, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's NPR's Julie McCarthy in Hong Kong. And that's up first for this Monday, November 11th, Veterans Day. I'm Stephen Skeep.
And I'm Noel King. We would love it if you start your day here with us again tomorrow. You can subscribe to Up First wherever you listen to podcasts, and it helps the show if you rate us and give us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Find more in-depth coverage of the stories we talked about today and more on Morning Edition, the radio show that Rachel Martin, David Greene, and Noel and I co-host. You can find NPR's Morning Edition on your NPR station. And if you want to find that, go up and down the radio dial or go to stations.npr.org.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.